Frank Rochester in their relationship is the best. But before the relationship and after the wedding scene, worst Rochester, least sympathetic Rochester, starts as an ass, ends as an ass until he's blind and crying.
Like, I said this out loud and I wrote it down, but I'm like, this is the screamiest man ever. Lillian, we're back once again, episode 4, I believe, of this wonderful podcast journey that we've decided to take with one another. How you doing?
I'm doing so good.
Yay.
I'm doing fantastic.
Oh my gosh. I'm glad to hear it. I'm doing very well. Thank you. this is a milestone for us in this podcast because this is the first adaptation of Jane Eyre that I had not seen previously before choosing it for an episode. So this was my first run through. So you and I are in the same boat. How does that feel?
It feels good. It feels really good. I don't want to like make you feel bad, but I have felt like deeply inferior to you every single episode because of just your Jane Eyre prowess. And this feels like maybe we're at least close to equal footing here.
Awesome.
We still see more adaptions, but this is our first time seeing this one.
Oh my gosh. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this watch through. And maybe it was because all of my reactions were 100% genuine and very like, what? With so many things. Yeah, but before we get too deep into our reactions and everything, Lillian, for those listeners who maybe haven't heard the previous episodes and haven't read or seen any Jane Eyre, can you give us like maybe a 30-second like quick summary of what they need to know?
Yeah, I absolutely will. And I do think I'm going to try to do it like unreasonably fast. And
perfect.
I think that that's how we should keep doing it. So for people who haven't seen Jane Eyre or maybe aren't as cool as us, so they haven't seen the 97 version, there is the quickest synopsis I can do is we start with a little girl being put into a red room for punishment where there's a for real ghost, it seems. Then she gets sent off to boarding school for being so bad, where everyone there is kind of awful to her, except for one friend and one teacher. Don't worry, the friend dies.
Yay.
Then as an adult, she works there before she goes up and gets a new job where she meets and falls in love with her angry boss. And they are going to get married, but twist, his wife is locked in the attic, so they can't get married. She runs away, passes out in a field. Is found by a man who immediately wants to marry her. She realizes, gross, he's not angry at all. And then goes back to find out the house that she had been living in was burned down. And now the man that she was in love with is blind. But don't worry, they still love each other. And they end with two kids.
Oh my gosh, Lillian, I timed you there just to see. You got 47 seconds and 53 milliseconds. So well done.
Under a minute. Still more than 30 seconds, which is what we were hoping for. So we'll see how you do next week.
Sounds good. yeah. Okay. I think the thing that I want to tap into right away is something you mentioned is that this is a very angry Rochester. He is so angry. I said grumpy at the end of the last one, because that's just the way he looks in all the posters. Mm-hmm. No, this guy's freaking bipolar. He goes from being rather sweet to something being like insanely mad about everything and screaming. Would you like to hear my impression of this Rochester?
More than anything, and just to give our listeners a little bit of context, you and I are very careful to not talk about these adaptions before talking about them on the podcast so we can have our most genuine reactions and not influence each other. All you said was, I have a lot of feelings. And you told me that before I watched it, and I'm dying to know what you think.
Well, you're going to hear them now, so don't worry about it. But first, here's my genuine impression of Rochester in this. It goes like this. Jane. That's it. That's what he sounds like.
Perfect. So you thought he was super sexy? Like, from that, I'm getting
No. I put him beneath the other two Rochesters we've seen so far, as far as like how I like his portrayal. He's not handsome in my opinion, which again, good casting. He's not supposed to be. He is, I don't know, just too bipolar. He like freaks out. He goes from 0 to 20 in a second. And I don't like how much he screams at her But there are lots of stuff about him that I do like, which we will, I'm sure, dive into when we get into specific scenes. But for the most part, just too angry. That's my result. Too angry.
Okay. And that's like, that's the biggest thing you have an opinion on is the Rochester of this. Is there anything else you have like an initial reaction to?
Oh,
or really just Rochester. Rochester is what you come to Jane Eyre for. So maybe yes. That's
I mean, that's my first big thing. It's just a very angry Rochester. My other big thing. So putting on my critical review hat, what I really like about this movie is the whoever wrote it, they did, I think, a wonderful adaptation because they, I think, fixed some things that I did not like about this original story, or the previous adaptations we've seen. I think I believe it's a woman who wrote this,
yep,
the adaptation.
It's a female writer. Mm-hmm.
She took some problematic dialogue from like earlier scenes and put them into later moments where I thought they made a lot more sense and made the like this guy's insane idea of like doing all this gaslighting on the woman he loves make it a little more sense just by the way that they contextualized everything. And I think specifically, maybe I'll just jump into that. I thought one of the strongest things is they did a really good job of showing Rochester and Jane like spending time with one another. Like they would go yes. for these walks in the garden and they would have these discussions, and it's alluded to that this was a regular thing for the two of them. And when we see them in moments like that, they genuinely seem like into one another and relaxed and like they're having a good time. And it was in one of the garden scenes where, okay, so there's that scene that usually happens in front of the fireplace where he talks about pleasure mm-hmm. and how he will have his way. And it's very coded and weird. But here they move that to this garden scene. And there it made more sense to me because then he's kind of describing the backstory of Adele's mother. Adele is the child that is his mm-hmm. ward that he cares for. And it's kind of there where we tap into this first concept of jealousy, which I am going to talk a lot about in depth later on, which I think was done pretty well in this. But yeah, so moving some things around, giving us moments like that, I thought that was a plus, 10 points.
Yeah. And I would say I had very similar feelings about it. I would say that actually leads really well right into like my initial reaction. There's a few things that I thought were like just sort of standard Jane Eyre at this point that weren't my favorite. but I really did enjoy, one of the things that I wrote down is during that part where they're having a relationship, mm-hmm. it felt the realest to me. Like yeah. where the 2011 version, I felt like there was chemistry between them. Mm-hmm. In this one, I felt like there was a emotional connection. Yeah. Like it felt real, more real to me. And even in scenes that we've seen before, mm-hmm. the way that the actress delivers the lines that Jane has, they do feel a little bit more like that attitude that people were constantly expressing. And right. she has a lot, she is much more of a match for him mm-hmm. in terms of like almost a sparring partner kind of way.
Yeah.
Then I think particularly now that I've seen the other versions, the 83 version, I think in particular, it's a criticism that I'm doubling down on with that, where she just is like kind of boring and bland. Yeah. And these past two Janes and this Jane more than, I think this might be my favorite Jane so far.
I think I agree with you.
And the other thing that I noticed with these that I think is a huge plus for this adaption, is the looks of both of them. This is mm-hmm. the first time, I think they're both fine looking actors.
Oh yeah.
But between their style and all those things, plain is a great way to describe both these folks. Like they did it in this adaption. I actually believe them. And then even when you compare it to, what is the name of the woman he gaslights her into thinking he's marrying?
Blanche Ingram.
Blanche. They describe her as really gorgeous. And in this one, she is notably more attractive than either of them.
Yes, that's
true.
And
I think that the visuals of the casting, mm-hmm. they really drive home here.
Yeah, I feel like with Jane, so I agree with you. I think this is my favorite Jane as well. I agree that she is plain, but there is this kind of like really clean beauty that I mm-hmm. think she has. And I think it's partially done with the lighting. There are lots of scenes where, so the actress clearly, I think, is like a natural blonde, because even though her hair is dark, she has essentially like no eyebrows, and she's obviously not wearing any makeup, and she has very clean skin. And I think there's a lot of scenes where they purposely like really put the light on her face, and it kind of just reflects off of her, and she kind of looks kind of glowy, which I think was, it feeds into Rochester, you know, reading her as like this ethereal creature. But so she had this very subtle beauty that I liked a lot. I also felt that this Rochester is way more insecure about his looks than the others. There's so many moments where he's like, I'm hideous. Why would you want a gargoyle like me? And she's like, I don't know, dude. But he seemed very fixated on that.
But I will say the adaption thing, and specifically like you referenced the author or the writer of this, it mm-hmm. is a female writer. And one of the things that I noted is something that I don't know a lot about, but is something that I wanted to talk about with this, is have you ever heard of the female gaze?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's the counter to the, for people who don't know, it's like the counter to the male gaze. So the male gaze is the idea that like women are really just there to be like hot and busty and like just around to be sort of like ornaments to the men in stories, where the female gaze, there's a lot of layers to that. So I won't do it justice here, but there's a few things that are like cornerstones to that. And one of them is hands. Mm-hmm. So the classic example that I've seen of this is there's a scene in Pride and Prejudice where he's helping her into the carriage, and then he like spreads out his fingies, and it's very good.
It's amazing.
Very good. There's a lot of hand holding in this that's mm-hmm. incredibly sensual.
Oh yes.
So sensual hand holding, big part of this adaption. And I did go like, I wonder if this is a female director, and went and looked, and was like, nope, it's some dude named Robert. and then I went and looked at the writer, and it is mm-hmm. a female writer named Kay Mellor.
Okay. Well done, Kay.
Mellor. And I think that a lot of those things that we're talking about that we like more in the way that this is grounded, mm-hmm. like there's lines that feel creepy in the other adaptions that in this feels so much more justified.
Yeah.
And something that I want to talk about specifically, and I really want to get your thoughts on before I monologue for an hour, is I personally don't think that after the revelation mm-hmm. of Rochester's wife, he does a very sympathetic speech. Mm-hmm. However, the seeds planted before are significantly more sympathetic to me. So like the way that he asks, should someone be like happy and things, like the way that he half tells that story mm-hmm. and explicitly asks Jane, would you, if you knew that something was like technically wrong, would you do, like he's clearly, for those of like the people who are outside of it and know that he has his wife locked in the attic, mm-hmm. We know what he's asking her. And then later when he says, I would have told you, but I didn't want you to have that emotional burden. It feels more sane than like, I don't know, I just never thought I should have to tell you because this is just like my thing and you don't need to know everything about my past, Jane.
I agree. I thought one of the best scenes is right after he sends the brother, his brother-in-law away in the carriage. Mm-hmm. And he says, the sun is about to rise. Will you come and watch it with me? And they go off on this kind of long walk into the woods. And that's typically where he's talking to Jane. Then at that moment, I think Rochester has decided in his mind, he's like, I'm marrying you. That's what's happening. But as he's talking to her about, he's like, soon I will be married. And she thinks it's about Blanche. But I thought this scene was done so well because, like you said, yes, like he has these things. He asks her opinion on this and he says, you know, I don't want to burden you and all these other things. But it is sort of like that kind of, I don't know, vulnerability. There's also something about them like being in the woods like that and going off to do something romantic and pretty, when it is sort of his trying to like kind of confess to her. To sort of be like, here's sort of something I kind of want to try and get on the same page as you and get your consent, sort of.
Well, like there's, yeah. And I think the big difference, because I think the sort of confession is like, I think the big difference in the past is I felt like he was just sort of like saying things and she was just a person standing there and he was kind of saying things at her and he was thinking out loud at her, mm-hmm. where this, it was a subtle shift. A lot of the lines were exactly the same, yeah. but it felt a lot more like he was trying to get an understanding of how she would feel about it without confessing.
Right.
So I genuinely believe that if she had come back with, yeah, you should do what makes you happy, even if other people think it's wrong, mm-hmm. I think you would have told her. And I've never thought that before.
Yeah.
Like none of the other adaptions made me feel like he would do that.
Right.
And I think that it's that subtle difference in the mm-hmm. way that the lines are written and the way that it's put together.
I agree. I also found it rather romantic. I thought in this one, after, you know, he has that kind of half conversation with her, they see the sunrise. He then asks her, he's like, will you come and watch the sunrise with me on my wedding day? And I thought that was really cute. Like that's not in any of the other ones. And we know that he's like, cause it's going to be our wedding day. So wouldn't that be romantic? But she's just like, yeah, I guess maybe from her perspective too, you could say this is maybe her last chance to be with him before he's in her mind a married man. So she's like, yeah, I'll have that one last beautiful moment with you before I have to say goodbye. But for him, he's like, it'll be our first beautiful moment together before we become a married pair. And so that was really cute.
Yeah. And I think I completely agree with that. And another thing about that moment that is actually something that I noticed in the 2011 version as well, that I think they play a little bit more into in this one is when she assumes that he's marrying the other person, like when he references the fact that he's going to be married soon, when she assumes that it's Blanche, he looks surprised that she hasn't caught on that he's proposing to her. Like,
right.
He looks like, no, this was, no, you and I were going to get, okay. And like, and he like, even in future conversations, like after she makes that assumption, he plays into it. And I think in this adaption specifically, because nobody is actively trying to trick Jane in this mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
I mean, he lets her be tricked, mm-hmm. but he's not like playing into that and being like, I'm going to get married soon. And maybe she's already in the house. And like, there's no Mrs. Fairfax saying like, I think there's going to be a wedding so soon. Like,
right.
It's yeah. instead, everybody else would assume that Jane's aware that this man is in love with her.
Right. She's just kind of like dense to it. But so that kind of actually leads into the topic that I think was done the best in this. And I think, so this version really focuses on this concept of jealousy. And I think that's what kind of springs into action his whole kind of silly mind game, which where yes, that's kind of touched on in like other versions, but in this one, like when they have that scene in the garden, which I think that garden walking scene in the beginning where it shows that they have this relationship and they talk a lot with one another and he's very, very open with her when he tells about, you know, Adele's mother. And also I wrote down this thing. He gets such bonus points, by the way, for being the only Rochester who is nice to Adele and likes her. Like he yes. is excited to see her when he first comes back. He holds her in his lap and he's giving her presents and it's this very nice thing. And when they're in the garden and he's telling the story, he says that when he was with Adele's mother and he found out that she was pregnant, he was thrilled to know that he was going to become Adele's father. But yeah. then it's when he finds out later that there was this other man in the picture. He's like, well, maybe she's not my daughter. Angry.
Yeah. And I really want to talk about the topic that you're talking about there, but specifically a note on the way that he treats Adele. I would attribute that again to the very subtle shifts in just the interpretation of mostly the same lines.
Right.
Because I think he's supposed to have this loving, teasing relationship with her. Mm-hmm. And it's very teasing in this.
Yeah.
It's just they double down on the loving, where the other one, they do the teasing and then they do the grumpy.
Yeah.
And that's not like super fun.
No, I agree. So he's way better as like a potential father figure. But yeah, so it's when they're, we learned that, you know, all of this kind of lovey-dovey stuff he had with Adele's mother and knowing he was going to be a dad, it all gets thrown out the window when he finds out about this other guy and he kind of introduces this concept of jealousy. And this is that speech where he asks her, you know, have you ever been jealous? She says, no. And he's like, that's because you've never been in love. And there's, you know, the gaze that he's looking at her and we know that he's in love with her, but she doesn't pick up on it because she doesn't think anyone could love her, all this stuff. But so I think the way that the writer like adapted some of this dialogue, it by having that conversation, that emphasis on that, it then makes a little more sense of why he would go off with this silly masquerade of bringing Blanche to the house to try and be like, oh, I want you to know how I feel, because I have this jealousy and I know what it is. And I want you to be jealous so I can know that you love me the way that I love you. And it's, yes, his own twisted way of kind of being like, because then we'll be equals, we'll have the same feelings. You'll know how I feel, you know, it eventually gets to the thing. But so knowing that, I think, makes it a little more acceptable. No, understandable. That's it. Understandable. Yes. Yeah. Like getting into his brain.
And I do think that like he, that passion, jealousy, like you have to understand what love is, like all of that stuff. I don't think he's right, but like, I can, like you said, like I can see how in his head, the way to find out if she really likes him is to bring somebody else there and see if she gets jealous. Like,
right.
Exactly. Like, like you said, it's so much more sympathetic and understandable.
I also think they conclude this kind of jealousy plot line really well when he takes her into town to go shopping and they have that confrontation with Blanche when they get out of the carriage together. And I love that instantly he's like, oh, I'm marrying Jane. Jane is my fiance. Just like right to her face. He doesn't hide it. And Blanche has some old, like wealthy guy in the background that she's now instantly jumped onto the next sugar daddy. And when they walk away, then we have that moment of Jane being like, why did you play this game? And he's like, I wanted you to care for me the way I care for you. And who cares about Blanche?
And the way that she was like, he's a lord, hair flip. Like,
yes.
She's like, his name is Lord. Nobody cares. Like,
Lord, nobody cares. Classic character.
I think another line that you and I have talked about before that again is like so creepy in other adaptions, like big, giant billboard of a red flag, that in this one sounds so much more sane, is when the super cool moment happens where in the middle of the night, Rochester goes to get Jane because somebody's injured and that's when you need a governess. he like goes and gets her and brings her upstairs and the brother-in-law is there. And the brother-in-law just kind of starts being like, I can't believe she like bit me. And Rochester is very clearly like a little bit nervous about him giving away too much, but at the same time, like doesn't immediately cut him off. Like he's sort of having this conversation with him.
Yeah.
And then he starts saying things and you can see Jane start to get genuinely afraid. Mm-hmm. And that's when he cuts him off and goes, talk more, no more on the subject because you're scaring her.
Right. So
then when he leaves, him saying, neither of you speak about this, it doesn't feel as freaking terrifying. It's not as obvious that he's hiding something, even right. though we know that he is.
Yes.
But it feels more like, please stop scaring this girl that I already woke up in the middle of the night for you. Like, this is not the way she needs to find out about this.
Exactly. No, that scene was handled so well. And also I love to, yes, because he's trying to kind of protect her from this fear. But also I love that they just like simply writing in that the brother, you know, kind of passes out. Then you don't even have to worry about us being like, okay, Rochester's gone. Now ask this guy what happened. He's unconscious because of the pain and all this other stuff. So that was a great choice. Also, how cool and spooky the scene where the door opens and out comes Grace Poole to check on this guy. And from Jane's perspective, she thinks that's the woman who attacked him. And beforehand, we hear Bertha scratching at the door. It's like, they did spooky really well in this.
That was one of the things that I have quite a few notes on. And I actually want to go all the way back and talk about the very first scene. I think where they start the movie has started to become something that I find really interesting. So they start it in that moment in the red room.
Yes.
And so she's already gotten in trouble and they're bringing her into the red room and there is a ghost in that room.
Yeah.
And we don't know if it's the imagination of a child that's leading to that ghost, but there is very clear, very scary things happening in that room. And that immediately makes the ghost that Jane experiences much more like tactile, like actual things happening, real undeniable sounds, which makes her sort of like fear and the more tactile, loud, actual person in her room, scary things later make more sense as well, as to like how she would experience those and then kind of dismiss them.
Right. No, the fact that they showed us her uncle like lying in the bed, that was spooky. And I was like, oh, damn, like there he is.
So here's a fun fact for everyone who doesn't know me and also for people who do know me. I get very easily for real scared. And I also live alone in an old spooky house.
It's literally a witch's house.
So I was watching this. I started it like a random weeknight at like 8 o'clock at night, which is pretty late for me. And it was dark because it's Minnesota winter. And I got like through that first scene and was like, I maybe shouldn't watch this alone at night. I think it'll spook me too much. I just get so easily spooked that genuinely, if this had been the last thing I'd done before I went to sleep, it would have scared me.
Oh my goodness. That is very cute. And I love you. And thank you for your vulnerability on our podcast.
I appreciate that.
Let's maybe turn it to a really happy topic, because I think regardless of anything else, this movie gets a 10 out of 10 pilots, because my God, that dog.
I know.
The biggest, floofiest pilot we've seen so far. And he got so much screen time.
Oh my God. Sorry.
Ruth, Lillian's dog just literally jumped into her lap and is kissing her. It's the dogs are coming out.
My actual dog heard my dog squeal, so she assumed that she was supposed to be a part of this.
Oh, cute.
So yes, it was so good. It was absolutely like the best pilot, which is a main part of it. This was, speaking of Ruth, her favorite adaption so far.
Oh,
she usually watches it with me and immediately falls asleep or goes to the other room. But she watched the whole thing with me because there kept being a dog. It was so good.
That's so nice. Oh, mm-hmm. I loved that floofy dog. I want to talk real quick about, so our introduction to pilot. I thought the slow-mo of when, so this whole scene where Jane, you know, walking down the road, although here she's by a waterfall. So interesting choice. And I loved the kind of like low budget mist, and it's clearly daytime, but they're like, oh, it's night. We just dimmed the lighting a little bit. But no, I loved the slow motion approach of him and the dog running through the fog. I love that he falls into the water, like not even just like a horse falls on, but he goes into the waterfall lake. And is instantly like, but I did really like that Jane like kind of yells back at him in this. She's yelling at him. She's like, what the hell is wrong with you, dude? Like, I'm walking here.
Yeah. Be like, actually this is called nature. It's not like I was, but to be fair to Jane, she also wasn't standing in a road in this one.
Right.
In the other one, she's standing in a road, which at the time, like, share the road, guys. We've all seen the signs. Mm-hmm. But she is very clearly like in the woods, and a man on a horse rode at her.
Yeah.
Fault is this.
Seriously, dude. So I liked that whole scene. That was good. Okay. Going back to Grace Poole. This is a note that I had, and I was like, this is also really good. So in all the other versions, when Grace Poole exists and Jane repeatedly asks him, why do you keep this lady on? Typically in those other versions, they just say, they're like, oh, it's my business. Don't worry about it. Stop asking questions about Grace Poole. In this one, you said Kay is the name of the lady who wrote this?
Yes.
Well done, Kay. She introduces this thing, which makes sense, where he's like, oh, Grace Poole has always served my family. I can't just cast her out. Like just that one little explanation. It's like, okay, I mean, this makes a little sense. And it also plays into this idea that Rochester is someone who doesn't abandon people in need. So I liked that. That was a good explanation.
Yeah. And then later when she asks about again, like, hey, I thought you fired Grace Poole. And she was literally in my bedroom last night. And he goes, you know that you need to lock your door.
Yeah.
And then he goes, and then his response of like, I tried to find somewhere for her to go, but the only option is the asylum. And you know what those are like. That's true, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is a truth that he's telling about why he can't get rid of this woman who's in the house and why she has to stay there. He doesn't have another option for her. Again, the planting the seeds of this Rochester he's more defensible before the confession.
Yes.
Now I do want to talk about my for real criticisms of Rochester, and I think you'll have some with me on this.
Let's do it.
I think Rochester in their relationship is the best. But before the relationship and after the wedding scene, worst Rochester, least sympathetic Rochester, starts as an ass, ends as an ass until he's blind and crying.
Like, I wrote down, I said this out loud and I wrote it down, but I'm like, this is the screamiest man ever. He's just constantly yelling.
He just, it's like, it's my least favorite thing. It's, and he never takes a sympathetic turn. Like, mm-hmm. We talked about this with Timmy D, is he starts the speech really like aggressively, but mm-hmm. then Timmy D takes a sympathetic turn when he realizes she's actually leaving.
Yeah.
This man gets so mad, so screamy, and then is physically shaking her in ways that feel deeply unacceptable to me. So with Timmy D, up until he like does the twist of like, now she's realizing she's leaving and he's suddenly much more sympathetic, this guy just is mad the whole time. And he like mm-hmm. shakes her and then she leaves.
Yeah.
And he's, I like, no sympathy the whole time. He's blaming her. Mm-hmm. The only sympathy is from his actions before. So right. there's no, he's very clearly upset, but he is criticizing her till the moment she gets in that carriage. Yes. We are hearing a voiceover of him telling her that she's going to regret this.
Mm-hmm.
She realizes that this is like the truest love she'll ever find. Completely puts all the burden on her. I do not believe for a second this man thinks he did anything wrong.
Yes. No, I agree that the way he handled that scene, it definitely was like negative points for him, which I was so disappointed in. Cause yeah, he was mm-hmm. doing a great job up until then. Like, I hated that he's like running after her and she has her suitcase in hand or her bag, and he like rips mm-hmm. it from her hands and he chucks it over the balcony. It's just like, dude, chill the F out. I liked the drama of him dragging her back to the spot where like he proposed. That was intense. Still, he's bad in that whole scene. I don't like him. What I do like about that scene though, is that Jane articulates her feelings and the problems that they're facing really, really well. So while he's being a complete unlovable asshole screaming at her, I thought everything she was saying was well articulated. I liked the emotion on her face and you can see the struggle. But so that was well written on her part, just like poorly acted on his.
Yeah. And I think I don't even necessarily like it's just, if there had just been that slight ownership of his actions at the mm-hmm. end there,
yeah.
like it, that would have totally changed the game. Importantly, talking about that scene by the tree, the going back to the different version of that tree, the confession of love for each other in the proposal,
mm-hmm.
Lots of good things in that. Very, very well done. I need to know if you had any thoughts and feelings about the kiss that they had.
It was so bad.
It was so bad.
I docked a lot of points on this one because the kissing was horrible. Like, their mouths were open and not meeting up in the right way. So I was like, oh, the kissing sucks. Like, you lost points for that one. But also, she didn't say the full essential Jane line where it's like, do you think because I'm poor and little that I am like soulless and heartless? They chopped that up. She took out a bunch of those essential parts. So minus points for not saying the entire line there.
Yeah, but there was parts of it, but it wasn't exactly the way it is, which now I'm assuming is a quote from the book.
Yeah.
In the other versions. Yeah, they basically, so to describe the kiss for the people who don't want to watch this adaption, they're essentially like, their mouths are just open and mm-hmm. most of the time is them breathing each other's air. And you might be thinking to yourself, Lillian, did you go find a YouTube video of this scene and take a screenshot of it that you're going to post on Instagram?
Oh my God.
I did do that. It's going on our Instagram. You can see this without having to do the work yourself by just following us at AirBuds.
Exactly. Because you need to see what it looks like when two Pac-Man try to like ram face it.
It's so bad. Like, and it's not like a bad moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bet, like the whole scene is them, like, it's trying to be passionate, but they're not like getting closer. It's just them holding faces and open mouths, and not open mouths kissing, like open mouth, like sort of just like
yeah.
hanging out
in each other's mouth space.
Uh-huh. They're really up in each other's mouth space. They wanted to share air.
So the thing that I wonder when I see A Kiss That Bad, I'm like, okay, either A, the actors didn't have good actual chemistry and weren't into each other enough to do a good job, or B, they were running short on time with their schedule and they had that one bad take and the director's like, whatever, we got to keep going. Like, I'm like, come on, dude, you don't want to do a second take on that one?
Here's my headcanon about what happened, like my behind the scenes version of this. Is they kept kissing, but the director kept being like, more passion, more passion, more passion. And they don't, like, you don't know. I have never recorded myself kissing for a reason. I don't need to know how that looks. I know movie kisses are not the way I actually want to do kisses, but it looks good. It's important that kisses in movies look good because that's the whole thing, is how it looks.
Exactly.
But it's like they didn't show them what they looked like. It just feels like somebody standing off camera screaming, I need more passion, more, breathe each other's air.
I'd be so upset if I were either of those two. And I went back and I saw the final product. I was like, God damn it. Like, why didn't you tell me to close my mouth?
Why'd you make me look gross?
Okay. So we are obviously jumping all over the place here, but because you mentioned the proposal, I think one thing that was so cute to me, and this was my read of this scene. So, I personally don't mind that they completely cut out that when she goes off to see her aunt who's dying, they don't even show that scene.
Yeah.
They're like, she went off, the lady died, she came back. I loved how kind of grumpy and jealous and angry, he was very angry, Rochester sitting up on that wall and he's like, you wrote a letter to everybody but me, Jane. Mer, mer, mer. And he's like so grumpy.
The joke. Are you going to talk about the joke about Violet?
Oh no, go. Oh yes, go ahead. Yeah.
So he says, you wrote a letter to Mrs. Fairfax. You wrote a letter to the nanny. You wrote a letter to Adele. You probably wrote a letter to Pilot. And she's like, he keeps like talking and like saying, and the whole time she's trying really hard not to laugh. And he's like, why are you laughing at me? And she goes, it's just the idea that I would write a letter to Pilot. Like, and it's very much that thing of when you like someone and so you think all their jokes are really funny. Like, yes. That's very much what happened there.
Yes, I agree. That scene was really cute. And the thing that I jotted down that actually warmed my heart and made me really happy is, so like right after that, the staff comes running around the corner because they're all so excited to see Jane, which this movie established a better sense of family at the house, where I didn't see that before. And she runs into their arms and they're all hugging. And I think the director did a great job where it cuts back and forth between, you see Rochester looking at Jane with his family and how well she fits in there. And then that's when he decides, I'm going to propose. Like, he's like, you are part of my family. This is the happiness in my life. I'm going to make this real. I thought that was really good.
Absolutely. And I also think there was more realistic household full of people too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because obviously I'm an expert in how many people it takes to run these houses, because I have watched Downton Abbey. And so like, that's one of the things that in period dramas in general, I'll watch them and I'll be like, three people are not managing that house.
Right.
Like, that's not what's happening here. Where like, you can see that when they're having the guests come in, Mrs. Fairfax is like talking to a ton of maids and stuff and being like, somebody go to the hotel. We need more staff because we're going to have all these people staying here. Like, mm-hmm. You can see this, like the house feels more alive and it makes the whole space feel more real.
I felt that one of my notes on this is that this is the most colorful version of Jane Eyre that we've seen so far. And I mean, like visually, like there's lots of bright colors. I felt like Thornfield does not feel spooky at all. It feels like a house with a lot of people in it. And so I know that the whole point is supposed to be like this kind of gothic, like secluded place, but I liked the warmth and the color because yeah, it does make more sense about why Jane is so happy there, because she has this family.
Well, and it makes, I would say it's not always spooky. Like, right. It's not like a spooky old house. There are spooky things that happen in it, as evidenced by the fact that this is the scariest one we've watched. But a similar thing to this larger number of people, this is the best attended wedding we've seen.
Yes,
there's actual people at their wedding.
I really liked that Mrs. Fairfax knows that there is a mad woman in the house, but she doesn't know that it's his wife. Because I loved at the wedding, she's there and she keeps cutting to her. Like, especially the guy's like, does anyone object? And it cuts to her because she knows there's something going on, but she doesn't know exactly what. So I liked that that was an element.
And I thought it was such a great, after they reveal, I want to go back to the wedding because there's a couple of things there that I want to talk about. But
yes.
to wrap up the Miss Fairfax, after the confession and like all of the truths come out, Miss Fairfax pulls Jane aside and goes, I'm so sorry. If I'd known, I would have told you. I thought it was Adele's mom, like such a believable thing.
Right.
But she thought like all of her hesitations and lies, and her hesitation isn't about he's already married, because then she's the worst for not stopping Jane from doing this.
Right.
But her hesitation is he's lying to you. Mm-hmm. Adele's mother's in the attic. You should probably know that before you get married. Like
right.
that hesitation, but not feeling like it's your place to share. Mm-hmm. That context makes that make so much sense.
I agree. I also thought a scene that was done really well is when we see her hesitation before Jane is married, there's the scene where Jane is trying on the wedding dress and everyone's excited for her and congratulating her, except for Mrs. Fairfax. And she goes up to her and she, you know, asks her, and what she does is she removes this little blue pin and she gives it to her. And she's like, here's, this is for good luck. And I thought that was done really well. Cause again, there's this whole kind of thing where she's like, should I say something? I guess I'm not going to say anything, but here you have my blessing. I thought that was good. There's so much tiptoeing around on all kinds of stuff. And I liked the way it was handled.
Absolutely. And very related to that scene and totally equally important to the understanding of adaptions. It's a reoccurring segment here on Airbuds, which is Bonnet Watch.
Yes. Oh my God. Bonnet, I wish I could like make a little audio clip and be like, this is Bonnet Watch.
So top bonnets in this, except her wedding bonnet.
Yeah.
I want to know what you think of her wedding bonnet. I have strong feelings.
I thought like it wasn't very spectacular. I thought, again, going back to my comment about how she glows in this movie, when she's standing up there, like for the wedding itself, she's like a bulb of light, just like glowing behind that veil. So very white and shiny. That's my critique.
Yeah. And I've really liked the wedding outfits in the last two. Like they looked so pretty to me. I really, really liked them. Obviously, I'm a fan of bonnets. We should bring them back as everyday wear.
Yep.
They're not wedding wear. The bride shouldn't wear a bonnet. Everyone in the audience should wear a bonnet, mm-hmm. but it does not go well with a veil.
No.
It made her head look super weird. and again, you can see this picture on our Instagram.
Oh, yay.
But yeah, the bonnet, not my favorite bonnet. There were good bonnets, no amazing bonnets.
Oh, yes. No, I think it'll be very hard to find an adaptation that does a harder bonnet game than 2011's bonnet game. That was off the charts.
But we're always out here. We're always looking at those bonnets.
Exactly. I liked the detail, very minor but nice, of when they're in the town and they're shopping and she wants the simplest lace and he wants to give her the French lace that is, you know, he's like, oh, I want to dress you up and show you off because this is how I show my love. His love language is obviously gifts,
yeah.
as he established in this movie. But that's an important detail, not only because it shows us their two perspectives of her, like, oh, simplicity is good. And he's like, no, like wealth and all this stuff. But because it is part of the plot that they need to have two veils, because when Bertha sneaks into her bedroom and rips one of the veils in half, luckily for her, she has her simple one that she bought as a backup, which that was one of the creepiest scenes. Because not only is Bertha in her room, she's shuffling around and it's like, oh God, like it looks like she's having a seizure. It's so scary. Well done on that.
It's the same level of creepiness, but like a whole other level, as when she's like standing in the room and she stands up against the wall and, Grace Poole comes in.
Yeah.
Except when it's Grace Poole, we know that Grace Poole's not scary. This one is Bertha, and we know Bertha is scary, and it's so scary.
Dude.
And that brings up the gift giving and all of that stuff brings up, they do that. He gives her another gift of this music box thing, and then they dance together mm-hmm. in his study. And then she brings that back up later when they're fighting and she's leaving, and she goes, when we were dancing in the study, she was locked in the attic. How yeah. am I supposed to dance and have fun and love you when your wife is suffering in the attic?
Lillian, I love that you brought that up, because that was one of my all-time favorite lines that was added to this, is when they're having that fight, she says, I could never trust you again. And we don't hear that but in other adaptations. And I, not only is that line like just so great for this context, but it speaks to me personally. Because I personally, whenever I see like romances like this in fiction and in real life, where, you know, somebody lies to their other partner in such a way for me, I couldn't accept someone back after that kind of betrayal. Cause I'm like, my trust is shattered. Yes, you can reform and you can make up for what you did, but what if this happens again? I can never trust you. That's gone now. That's like a once, you get one chance with that. And if you ruin it, sorry, goodbye. So I love that she said that.
Yeah. And there's so many moments in that feel more real. Mm-hmm. But then I think another place where it drops off for me is it makes it feel the resolution is less satisfying mm-hmm. when he isn't expressing any regret. Mm-hmm. That scene at the end, when she comes back to him, his only concern, like he cries and he's very emotional about the fact that she came back, but he's not like apologetic. He hasn't rethought any of his actions. Mm-hmm. He just thinks he's ugly now.
Yes.
And so why would she want him anymore?
Oh my God. He's such a sad sack in that scene, which I think another reoccurring segment on this show is going to be two hands, one eye, ? So because in this one, he again has two hands. Just one of them is really crispy. Mm-hmm.
It's his crispy hand. But again, like Rochester really thinks that he's actually never met Jane before. So he thinks that she's not going to be into him because of his looks.
Gosh, that guy. Way to be so vain.
Here's an important thing that I realized watching this that I haven't realized about the other ones, but has been true of every adaption. Why isn't Adele around at the end? They do like a whole thing about the future of them. And we never see Adele. There's no like lanky teen in the background of their happily ever after fantasy where they've got two kids.
I know this from listening to another fantastic Jane Eyre podcast that everyone should go check out. It's called On Air by the Rom Pod. So they go through every episode is a chapter analysis. They're reading the novel. And so if I can remember from what they said, I believe it's like either right after Jane runs away or sometime after the accident, Rochester sends Adele like off to like some kind of school for her to go, you know, learn how to become a lady. Cause he's like too distraught by everything. He's like, I can't care for you anymore. And I'm not getting another nanny in here. So I don't want to fall in love again. So he just sends her away.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's like, I feel like, especially in this one where we get so much of the love for Adele and that's so much of where their relationship is based off of. I just want a lanky teen in the background.
I know. Wouldn't that be great? A little French girl doing dances.
That last scene is also Jane's best dress. So good.
Yes. And it's really cute seeing him holding a baby. That's always nice. Yeah. okay. So I think, I've just got a couple of like little, like fun fact thingies, before we do like kind of a wrap up. So we talked about this off air. Did you recognize the priest who did their wedding? Cause you've seen him in a movie that you love and is very dear to you.
I do remember recognizing him, but I could not place him.
Okay. He played Lizzie's uncle in Pride and Prejudice.
Oh
yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I had a moment of like, who are you? Mm-hmm.
Imagine him being like, Lizzie, what a snob you are.
I did. Again, we talked about this and I asked you if you knew who Mrs. Fairfax was.
I don't.
And you did not remember. She played Madame Pomfrey in Harry Potter.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Yeah. And she's in, like, I went and looked at her IMDb. She's also in everything.
Of course.
She's been in everything.
There's like 20 British actors and they do everything together.
Yes. And then you were the one, I could not figure out where Mr. Rochester was from, but you remembered where that actor was from.
Yes. And he was in, I think Lance Rader is his name, in Game of Thrones. He's the one who united the wildlings.
Yes.
That actor is a very large man.
He's very large.
Like he's tall and broad, which I always like in my Rochesters. I also looked up the age gap between the two of them because she's the youngest looking Jane that we've seen. And the age gap is pretty accurate to the book. The actress who plays Jane was 20 at the time of filming that movie and he was 44. So yeah, big age gap difference.
Maybe it's why their kiss was so bad. Probably. Like, you could be my dad.
And she like couldn't get that out of her mind. He's like, oh, don't touch my lips. Let's just breathe each other's air.
Let's just breathe each other's air.
Oh my gosh. Any like other final notes that you want to throw in?
I have a super important final note, and this is really more for other people than for you. So I guess take a break. But so some of you know that the very first time that Piper and I talked about Jane Eyre on a podcast actually wasn't this podcast. Correct. It was when I was a guest on Piper's other podcast with her fiance called World Forge. It's very amazing. You should go check it out. In February of 2020, I was on as a guest, and Piper had just discovered Jane Eyre. And she spent a solid 20 minutes of this podcast talking about how much she hated Jane Eyre. And I was trying to remember what that was like. So I went back and re-listened.
Oh my gosh.
And you hated Jane Eyre. And I think that Jane Eyre gives you Stockholm syndrome.
I think you're right.
I'm liking it more and more the more that we see this story in other situations. Yes. And I don't, like, I think about it and I'm like, I don't think fundamentally any of my like feelings about the premise of the story has changed. Mm-hmm. It's just how different it feels going in knowing that he has his wife locked in the attic than being surprised that he has his wife locked in the attic.
Well, exactly. It's that like the shock of the first watch versus the, I don't know, softness and curiosity of the romance. I think that's the thing that hooked me from the beginning is I don't think at any point this story is meant to be like, this is a good thing that happened. I think it's the sake of drama, you know, it's the sake of conflict. It's like, these are bad things, but look how these people navigate these horrible instances that befall them. And so that's one thing that I think is the glue trap of Jane Eyre is you're like, whoa, that's buck wild. I got to watch it again. You know, it's like seeing a car accident. Like you're like, oh, what? So yeah, I it gets you.
So I think that's the last of my thoughts. If those are also the last of your thoughts, what are your rating? What is your rating for this adaptation of Jane Eyre?
So, you know, I think I'm actually going to give this one my highest rating yet. I'm going to give it an 8. And that's like really hard for me to do because I think like the acting in the beginning is bad. I hate how screamy he is, but this is the most well-done love story for the two of them that I've seen. And that really bumps it up for me. So I think I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 Timmy D's.
Great. I also agree that I think it's the best romance. I think it's also the best pilot, which as we all know is incredibly important to me.
Yes.
But I cannot get over how rude he was at the end and like how angry he was and how he just did not accept any responsibility for his actions. And that really drove my score down. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 bonnets. Nice. And I am going to go back and forth between bonnets and Pilot the Dog, because if I was just rating on a Pilot the Dog scale, it'd be a lot higher. And I don't think that's fair to Pilot, but it is fair to bonnets.
There we go. I was going to say the Pilot game in this was so good. I thought maybe that would be your rating, but that makes sense. I just want to also throw in a little fun fact for everybody. The chairs in his living room that we see, I once had a chair with that exact same upholstery. And I just kept staring at it. It was very distracting. I also feel like the same upholstery is used in the Timmy Dalton version. Like maybe they just recycled the chairs, but I kept seeing it. I'm like, that's my chair. So
I did feel oddly drawn to that upholstery. So maybe I've seen it before and that's why.
Yeah. It's in your subconscious.
So for those of you going on this horrible journey with us, we are going to do the next version of Jane Eyre that we're going to watch is actually another series. There's 4 episodes in this, and it was initially released in 2006. It has the Jane is Ruth Wilson.
Dude, this is my favorite one.
Yeah, that's great. Because this was actually suggested to us by one of our listeners.
Oh boy.
So we would love ideas. We have the access to Google and the internet, so we can always find an endless number of Jane Eyres, but we want to listen to what you want us to listen to. So next episode, that's what we're going to talk through. And if you want to watch along, I'm sure it's available places. It looks like it's available on Hulu.
Awesome. Lillian, I am so excited for you for this one, because I think this is the most sympathetic Rochester I've ever seen.
Ooh, I'm excited.
So yes, maybe this will be the one that opens your heart. I mean, it's already opening, but it's like getting wider and wider.
That's so mean. Opens my heart. Because I'm
Jane Eyre, not, bitch. No, you are open. Your heart is open to so many things. But when it comes to Jane Eyre, it's like slam shut. So it's slowly opening for Jane.
It's just so full of dogs in there that there's not really enough room for this many James.
Well, yeah, it's like when you open the door to like a dog pound and you just hear all the barking, 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 and you close it and like, oh, sorry, don't mind them. Well, how's it going? Let's talk out here in the hallway instead. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
awesome. Great. Well, I can't wait. This is going to be a fun time. And as always, people, thank you so much for joining us on this and listening to our ramblings. If you want to see all of these wonderful screenshots that Lillian has so meticulously curated, they're available on our Instagram, which is at Airbuds, also on our Twitter, probably. And if you want to email us suggestions for versions you want to see or other period dramas, because that's something that we're going to kind of sprinkle in now and then just to break up all of this madness, send us an email, airbuds@gmail.com. And Lillian, what's the website again? Is it?
It's airbuds.weebly.com because okay. It's free.
Nice. Awesome. And yeah, Lillian's curated that in a beautiful way. So lots of ways to engage. Thank you for joining us. We will be with you again next week.
Cool. Bye, guys.
Bye.